I have in mind another subject, which, if the police would allow it, is one of the greatest creations of the modern theatre. It includes a character who is one of the greatest creations that the theatre of all nations and all times can boast. The story is Le Roi s'amuse, and the character I mean is Triboulet. In that letter to his librettist, Francesco Maria Piave, Verdi's enthusiasm for the character of Triboulet, the deformed court jester in Victor Hugo's play Le Roi s'amuse, is evident. Verdi had been asked to compose a new opera for the Teatro La Fenice as part of Venice's carnival season in 1851, and the composer had set his heart on adapting Victor Hugo's play. Hello, I'm Colin Ure. Welcome to my podcast, where I'll be talking about Verdi's opera, Rigoletto. The musical excerpts I will be using during my commentary are provided courtesy of EMI Records Limited, with Cornel McNeil and Tito Gobbi as Rigoletto, Reri Grist as Gilda, Nicolai Gedda as the Duke of Mantua, Agostino Ferrin as Sparafucile, and Anna Distasio as Maddalena, with the chorus and orchestra of the Teatro dell'Opera di Roma, conducted by Francesco Molinari Pradelli, and the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Walter Suskind. Le Roi s'amuse, or literally, The King Amuses Himself, which had premiered in Paris in 1832, had marked a revolutionary new direction in French theatre. It was written for the common man, and mixed together the elements of the grotesque and sublime, the tragic and the comic, replacing the traditional form of French tragedy with a new style of French drama. La tragédie est mort, vive le drame, exclaimed an exultant Victor Hugo at the time. Based on real-life people, Hugo's play takes place in early 16th century France, at the royal court of King Francois I, a notorious libertine. Accused by one of his courtiers, Monsieur de Saint-Vallier, of deflowering his daughter, Triboulet and the king ridicule him. Incensed by their mockery, Saint-Vallier curses them. But when Triboulet's daughter Blanche is also deflowered by the king, Triboulet conspires with the assassin Saltevadille to murder him. It's only when Blanche sacrifices her life to save the king that Triboulet realizes that his hunger for revenge, combined with Saint-Vallier's curse, has brought about her death. Now, a play about a licentious monarch's dissolute court, whose deformed jester plots regicide, divided public opinion. When Triboulet attacked the courtiers, crying, "Your mothers gave themselves to their lackeys, you are all bastards," the working classes stamped their feet and cheered, while the higher echelons of polite Parisian society were outraged. As a result, performances of the play were banned in Paris for half a century. Verdi and Piave's new opera was to be called La Maledizione, The Curse, but unbeknown to them, storm clouds were gathering. When the Austrian military governor of Venice informed the management of La Fenice that the subject matter of La Maledizione was revoltingly immoral and obscenely trivial, and that Verdi and Piave should abandon it immediately, it looked as though history was repeating itself. Verdi, who was accustomed to having monumental fights with operatic censors, stuck to his guns, and with some fleet footwork from Piave, a compromise was finally agreed. The opera, which was now called Rigoletto, was to take place at the Duke of Mantua's court in Italy during the 16th century. Some of the dramaturgy was modified, most notably with a view to softening the unsavoury character of the Duke. All of the characters were renamed. Triboulet became Rigoletto. Blanche became Gilda. Saltabadille and his sister Magalon became Sparafucile and Maddalena, and Saint-Vallier became Count Monterone. Even with these changes, what remained fundamental to Verdi, and what Piave successfully achieved for him with his libretto, was a dark, disturbing story depicting class division, hatred and superstition, which faithfully replicated Hugo's original. Verdi's music portrays a world steeped in darkness, which outlines the plot, the emotions and personalities of its characters, and the opera's interior and exterior locations. Candlelit rooms, shadowy street corners, dilapidated buildings, and a murky riverbank. Even the opera's principal theme, a curse, represents a time of darkness and superstition. Rigoletto must be the grimmest story in all of Verdi's operatic output. The opera may not be as revolutionary a work as Le Roi s'amuse, but it does deliver some surprises. Like the play, the opera has neither a hero nor a villain, and as the majority of the characters are polluted by the shallowness and poisonous duplicity of the Duke's court, they all practice varying degrees of deception. Apart from Monterone and Sparafucile, the characters hide their true feelings or identities, adopting artificial ones instead. At the Duke of Mantua's court, everyone wears a mask. Rigoletto's double life, court jester and loving father, are kept secret from those around him. The Duke pretends to be an impoverished student when seducing Gilda, and then a young soldier when seducing Maddalena. Even Giovanna, Gilda's servant, is deceived and becomes a willing accomplice in Gilda's seduction. And by keeping the seduction secret, Giovanna deceives Rigoletto. Rigoletto was duped into helping the courtiers abduct Gilda, while the courtiers are under the misconception that Gilda is Rigoletto's mistress. It's only when the deception is discovered that they learn the truth, and Gilda finally discovers Rigoletto's true identity. Maddalena lures the Duke to her brother's tavern by pretending to be an actress, while Gilda dresses up as a beggar when sacrificing her life for the Duke. Even in the opera's final scene, deception is maintained. When Sparafucile asks Rigoletto for the identity of the man he must murder, Rigoletto replies chillingly, "He is crime and I am punishment." It was common practice in the 16th century for monarchs and rulers to have jesters or fools to entertain them. Their job was to make their masters laugh, usually at the expense of other people. So given his job title, Rigoletto is a comic tragic character, compelled to wear the masks of comedy and tragedy. He despises the Duke and his court, but despises himself more for being part of it. His dependence on the Duke's favour provokes feelings of self-loathing and helplessness, which inflame and empower his sardonic wit and cruelty. It's only his paternal love for Gilda that preserves his humanity. The contrast between laughter and tears is an important theme of the opera. The Duke's character determines the mood of the court, and laughter defines it. Tutto è gioia, tutto è feste, all is fun and merriment, the courtiers sing. In the opera's opening scene, the Duke laughs disparagingly at the constancy of husbands and lovers, while the courtiers barely contain their laughter on hearing that Rigoletto has a mistress. When Rigoletto mocks Count Ciprano for being a cuckold, the Duke rebukes Rigoletto, not for his mockery, but for taking the joke too far. And when Rigoletto humiliates Count Monterone, the Count reproaches him for laughing at a father's grief. Rigoletto and Gilda's tragedy is also influenced by the actions of the court, but it's tears rather than laughter which defines their relationship. Rigoletto was haunted by the fear that one day Gilda might be abducted, knowing that the courtiers would laugh when they realised that she was a jester's daughter. And when his worst fears are realised, Rigoletto initially pretends to laugh at the courtier's quips, while inwardly he is crying bitter tears. When Gilda and Rigoletto are finally united, Rigoletto once again tries to laugh off his earlier concern. But when he learns from Gilda that the Duke has deflowered her, his only words of comfort are that tears will assuage her shame. The contrast between laughter and tears is also in evidence in the final act, set in Sparafucile's tavern. As the Duke flirts outrageously with Maddalena, she laughs and plays along. It's only when she realises that he's to be murdered that she pleads tearfully with her brother to save him. While Gilda, who has been watching the seduction from outside the tavern, is heartbroken at the Duke's deception and betrayal. Rigoletto is a watershed in Verdi's output. Just as Piave's libretto creates a dichotomy with its dramaturgy, Verdi creates a dichotomy with his music. Rigoletto incorporates and contrasts music composed in the traditional style of the period with new and skillful use of instrumentation and orchestral structures, most notably the music of the opera's opening scene and the storm music in Act III. Just like Hugo's play, Italian opera would never be the same again. Verdi's instrumental writing, and specifically his use of lower-sounding instruments, clarinets, bassoons, lower strings and bass drum, provide the tinta, or colour, of the opera's changing moods and scenes. The music for the opera's orchestral prelude is full of foreboding, and includes the theme associated with Rigoletto's fear of Monteroni's curse, which will haunt him throughout the opera. On the surface, the music which Verdi composes to depict the Duke's court sounds shallow and second-rate. But this is intentional. Using an onstage band that plays a series of light-hearted dances, Verdi creates the triviality and hedonism of the Duke's world. There is neither a women's chorus nor large-scale choral numbers in the opera, and it's only in the opera's opening scene that Verdi writes a finale for principals and chorus. The close-knit harmonic writing for male chorus portrays the courtiers as a one-dimensional tribe. Their choruses, always written in major keys, sound strangely mechanical and detached. But this, too, is intentional, showing the courtiers' indifference to the world they inhabit. Here they are in the process of abducting Gilda, laughing like a group of naughty schoolboys, relishing the joke that they're playing on Rigoletto. One of the opera's most remarkable features is the storm sequence in Act III. Never before had a composer written storm music to mirror the drama. The orchestration portrays flashes of lightning and rolling thunder, distant at first, but growing in intensity. "The storm is approaching, the night is growing darker," exclaims Sparafucile, while Gilda wonders what such a dreadful storm portends. By using the wordless male chorus to imitate the moaning of the wind, another masterstroke, the storm reaches its climax as Gilda is fatally wounded by Sparafucile. "If only I could make four people speak simultaneously in my play, so that the public would understand what each one was saying and feeling," wrote Victor Hugo on seeing the opera. He was, of course, referring to the famous quartet, Bella Figlia dell'Amore, from Act III, which provides a moment of light relief from the gathering storm, and is another important example of the juxtaposition between laughter and tears in the opera.
Oh!
Rigoletto solos, Parisiamo, and Cortigiani vil razza danata are groundbreaking in their musical style and structure, and reveal a new direction in Verdi's vocal composition. Parisiamo, inspired by Verdi's love of Shakespeare, is a reflective piece written in the style of a musical soliloquy. Rigoletto's random thoughts, his deformity, his hatred of the Duke and his court, his love for Gilda, and his fear of Monteroni's curse are portrayed in a series of short musical phrases. The ability to vary the vocal tone colour and dynamics while making each phrase sound spontaneous is the solo's ultimate test for a baritone. Here's an excerpt sung by the legendary Italian baritone Tito Gobbi.
Questo padrone mio, giovin, giocando, si possente bello, sonnecchiando mi dice, fuochi arrida, buffone, forzarmi d'eggia farlo,
in Cortigiani vil razza danata, Rigoletto confronts the courtiers for abducting Gilda. Unlike Parisiamo, the aria portrays Rigoletto's conflicting emotions rather than his thoughts. Composed in one continuous movement, divided into three distinct sections, Rigoletto vents his anger at the courtiers, then pleads to them for pity, before finally begging them for forgiveness. Is the Duke a predatory libertine or simply a narcissist, a spoiled brat who's in love with himself and believes that everyone else loves him too? Verdi writes three solos for this uncharacteristic of tenor roles. In Questo Quella, the Duke waxes lyrical about his favourite subject, women, and how one beauty is much like another. It's in the style of a ballata, or dance song, a style dating back to early Renaissance Italy. Verdi's rum-ti-tum orchestral accompaniment for the ballata, defining the Duke's superficiality.
Questa quella per me pari sono a qualch'altra d'intorno, d'intorno mi vedo, e del mio coro l'impero non cedo, meglio ad una che ad altra beltà. Le costoro avvenenza e qual dono di che il fato ne fiora la vita.
The Duke's second act solo, Parmi veder le lagrime, a recitative, aria and cabaletta, is the only solo in the opera written in the traditional style of the period. Hearing that Gilda has been abducted, the Duke, imagining her tear-stained face, vows vengeance. But is he being sincere? Having lost Gilda, his latest plaything, are the tears not really for himself? When the courtiers tell the Duke that Gilda is in the palace, he reveals his true character once again. As the music of his cabaletta reaches its climax, our priapic anti-hero rushes off to claim his prize. La donna immobile, all women are fickle, sings the Duke in Act 3. Composed in the style of a strophic song, its irresistible melody, written over another rum-ti-tum accompaniment, belies the tragic irony of its words. Had Gilda been fickle, then it would have been the Duke's body and not hers that would have ended up in Sparafucile's sack. Gilda's transition from naive teenager to worldly young woman is defined in the music of her two solos, Caro Nome and Tutte le feste al tempio, further examples of Verdi's new compositional style. Caro Nome, in which she sings of her infatuation for the student, Gualtier Malde, who's actually the Duke in disguise, is a dreamy rhapsody, written as a series of variations. Her aria, composed without a show-stopping finale and incorporated into the fabric of the unfolding drama, illustrates Verdi's intention to give the music and dramaturgy equal emphasis and to maintain the momentum of the drama. By contrast, Tutte le feste al tempio portrays Gilda as a young woman cognizant of the world's cruelty and disappointments. Verdi's skillful use of a solo instrument is heard to great effect here, the plangent sound of an oboe colouring the solo's mood. Verdi would use the oboe to colour characters' feelings and emotions in some of his later operas as well, most notably to portray Violetta's longing for Alfredo in La Traviata, and Aida's longing for her homeland of Ethiopia. Now, here is Gilda's vocal line, mirroring the mood of the oboe. By far the most remarkable characteristic of Rigoletto is its series of extraordinary duets, which anchors the narrative and drives the character relationships. Verdi's choice of instrumentation for the brief encounter between Rigoletto and Sparafucile conjures up a world of shadows and conspiracies. As Sparafucile offers his services, their hushed conversation is accompanied by the scantest of orchestral textures. In contrast, the mood of the Duke and Gilda's duet couldn't be more different. As he seduces her, his honeyed words, accompanied by the now familiar strains of the rum-ti-tum orchestral accompaniment, betray his insincerity. Interrupted and forced to flee, one cannot help but wonder, knowing his duplicitous nature, whether his repeated cries of addio, which the guileless Gilda can only echo, are just another of his ploys. Was Gilda really the only woman that the Duke intended to seduce that evening? At the very heart of the opera are the three duets for Rigoletto and Gilda. The first one takes place in the garden of Rigoletto's house. "Here I change into another man," he tells us. Within the safety of his walled garden, Rigoletto knows that he is loved and can love in return, his home a sanctuary, where he can remove his jester's mask. Although he refuses to tell Gilda his name or let her explore the city, the love he feels for her is expressed in one of the most noble and beautiful melodies in the opera. Oh, While love defines the first duet, shame defines the second. Unlike the walled garden, the Duke's court is not a sanctuary, and love has been replaced by debauchery. As Rigoletto and Gilda face each other for the first time in the Duke's court, Rigoletto feels ashamed because of his profession, while Gilda, having failed to meet her father's expectations, feels ashamed in return. Their love and trust has been sullied by the Duke, and all that is left for them are bitter tears. The defining moment in Rigoletto and Gilda's relationship is reached in the duet's tour de force finale. Rigoletto, blinded by hatred, seeks vengeance, while Gilda, blinded by love, desires forgiveness. In this finale, which also brings Act Two to its conclusion, their voices rarely sing together, revealing the chasm which now divides father and daughter, and which will propel them towards their inevitable tragedy. Given the Duke's deception and cruelty, it seems unbelievable that Gilda still loves and wants to save him. When Rigoletto discovers Gilda's mortally wounded body in Sparafucile's sack, her face illuminated by the last flash of lightning from the dissipating storm, his world falls apart completely. In one of Verdi's most ravishingly beautiful death scenes, Gilda tells him that she will pray and look down on him from heaven. Verdi's belief in Le Roi s'amuse and his enthusiasm for the character of Triboulet was not misplaced. The opera is a defining moment in Verdi's career, and the character of Rigoletto is not only one of the greatest roles for baritone, but also one of the most important creations in 19th century Italian opera. Rigoletto's hatred for the Duke, combined with his suffocating, overprotective love for Gilda, is his ultimate tragedy. Gilda, whom Rigoletto has locked up for her protection, deceives him the moment he allows her brief respite from her repressive captivity. It's only the Duke, a man devoid of any endearing qualities, who evades justice, disappearing into the night, singing about the fickleness of women. Gilda's love, a shining light in the threatening darkness, is too pure to survive the depravity of the world she lives in. When Rigoletto begs her not to die, Gilda realizes that only in heaven will she find freedom. "There is no love without freedom," sang the Duke in his Act I ballata, Questo o Quella. Rigoletto the jester has been outjested, and the fool has been fooled. Monteroni's curse has found its mark.
Gilda, mia Gilda, è morta.
The music that you have heard is generously furnished by Warner Classics and is available for purchase on iTunes.